There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, I would like to tell you that I've secured an interview with Vladimir Putin. Unfortunately, I haven't, but Tucker Carlson did. And we've got the transcript of a two-hour interview from that. And he made some absolutely fascinating points about history and the dollar and the role of the US and the power centers in the US. Now, all of that is absolutely right up my street. The combination of the influence of the dollar, global politics, geopolitics, all that kind of stuff. That is exactly what we cover here on Brokenomics. So I felt that I had to respond to this and specifically really get into some of the comments that he made about what happened to Russia after 1991, and it wanted to try and join, as Putin calls it, the family of civilized nations, and how he was rebuffed from that. What he thinks is going on with effectively the CIA, when he's talking about the American decision makers, and of course the role that the dollar has and all of that. There's also a lengthy bit of history in there in the front, which I will cover fairly briefly. Although, of course, as you know, Brokenomics is not a history channel. My history is not great. I think I'm pretty good post World War II, and particularly post 1971. But we will touch on it. What I will say for the history aspects of what Putin was talking about is, if you go and look on YouTube for Apostolic Majesty, he did a fantastic deconstruction of the first sort of 30-40 minutes and the history elements that Putin was talked about. I have watched that. I will touch upon it. In that video, Apostolic Majesty was going into the nuance that Putin did not go into, and criticizing Putin where he felt that criticism was warranted, and agreeing with him where he felt that it was where it was not. Of course, we've seen various regime historians such as Tom Holland and others come out with their regime talking points on Putin, which is basically to say, we don't like his worldview. He's a bad guy, obviously. Now let me tell you why every single thing he said was wrong, which is a rather absurd point to take. Putin, of course, did make conflations. He did mislead in places, and he certainly oversimplified. You might not thinking that from the fact that he sort of spent half an hour to 40 minutes talking about that stuff, but there were certainly greater depths and nuances that you could go on to that. So if it's the history you're primarily interested in, Apostolic Majesty is your man for that, and perhaps even Bo here at the Lotus Eaters will get into that as well. But we will touch on it because it does make up a notable proportion of that interview. Now, I'm doing this in the home studio because, basically I wanted to get this out as this week's Brokenomics, and I didn't have time to record it on the Tuesday and get it out that same Tuesday afternoon. Normally there's a week lag, you know, we record on Tuesday and it goes out the next Tuesday. So I didn't have the option of doing it in the studio. So I'm going to be boomering the tech as I often do when I try and do these things myself without the benefit of a producer on hand. But we will see where we can get to, and hopefully we can draw out some interesting points, especially as he gets into that later dollar stuff. So I've got the transcript here. Full transcript. You can find it on the Kremlin website if you want to not only watch it, but if you want to sort of get into going through this line by line as I have. So Tucker goes in, he sits down, and he quite understandably starts off with a question about what happened in Ukraine 2 years ago, to which Putin asks him, are we going to have a serious conversation, or is this going to be a talk show? Putin, Tucker, of course, says it's going to be a serious conversation, at which point Putin says, and I quote here, "So if you don't mind, I will take only 30 seconds or 1 minute of your time to give you a little historical background." Now, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the interview, it did not take 30 seconds. It was somewhat longer than that. So anyway, Tucker gives his consent for a 30 second to 1 minute bit of background, and Putin, bless him, he then goes to 862 for the creation of the Russian state. I mean, I'll read a bit to give you a bit of flavor of it. "In 882, Rurik's successor, Prince Oleg, who was actually playing the role of regent to Rurik's younger son because Rurik had died at that time, came to Kiev. He ousted two brothers who apparently had once been members of Rurik's squad. So Russia began to develop with two centers of power, Kiev and Novgorod." Okay, so again, like I say, I'm not going to touch too much on the historical side, but what I will note, some very good points made by people who've looked at this, such as Apostolic Majesty, is that Putin is certainly somewhat oversimplifying here. He's conflating Rus, spelled R-U-S, well, at least that's the Latinized spelling of Rus, with what is now the sort of modern Russia. Now, history, of course, does not move in any sort of straight lines. History is very messy. If history were a person, it would be the drunk guy walking back from the pub, meandering from side to side and getting lost frequently. And you are certainly not going to get a high definition look at the historical analysis here from me. You might get a bit of 8-bit history, but it was interesting, the criticisms from this, because a lot of people criticize Putin for being boring and for spending too long on this. And of course, the historians have gone the other way and said that he was too light on this. But what we can do is we can look at what Putin was trying to tell us. And Putin is basically, in everything that follows, he's trying to tell us is that there is a Russian people, or something that we would come to regard as the Russians, and they were immersed in all of this area. It might have been simpler for him to simply say that the first thing that we can point to and say, okay, that is probably a precursor of the modern Russian state, had its capital in Kiev. And it did for many centuries. So, you know, you could say, okay, Kiev, or Kiev, as we're supposed to call it now, was the origin of in some way, modern Russia. So anyway, so he continues various bits, and he talks about, from this time, a centralized Russian state began to strengthen. Why? And this is the interesting point for this. Because of a single territory, integrated economic ties, and one and the same language. So what he's talking about here, of course, is a common people, an ethnos. It is fascinating to see a global leader talking in terms of a people, of an ethnos, of common and shared bonds. It's so striking because, of course, modern leaders, especially Western leaders, simply do not think in those terms. In fact, if anything, they go the opposite way, and they say that the true origins of us as a nation is diversity. You saw those memes going around afterwards of somebody like Rishi Sunak sat opposite Tucker being asked about the origins of the British, to which his response is, "Oh yes, when the ship Windrush left Jamaica in 1984." You know, this modern Western leaders go out of their way to deny that there is any sense of people, any commonality, and that actually the only thing that makes us great in any sense is the fact that we are a melting pot or a multicultural society. Putin is going completely the other way here. He's talking about a common thread of people. Now, he's not doing it primarily in a racial way. He's doing it in a cultural way, talking about, as he does there, single territory, integrated economic ties in the same language. He's all about the culture here, and this is a common theme as we go through it. He then makes some comment on, back in the Middle Ages, Prince Yasov the Wise introduced the order of succession to the throne, blah, 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 and then he goes through. I just thought that was amusing because it sounded like a quote from Star Wars, didn't it? You know, did I ever tell you the tragedy of Prince Yasov the Wise? Where can I learn about this, asked Tucker. Not from an American. I don't know if you get the reference, but yes. So then as we go through, so he then goes on to talk about Kiev began to gradually gravitate towards another magnet, the center that was emerging in Europe. This was the Grand Duchy of Lithuania. It was even called Lithuania Russian Duchy because the Russians were a significant part of its population. So again, there, you know, this is not so much a point about ethnos or common culture or anything like that. He's talking about emerging power structures and about how, as Russia started to emerge, you've got these competing power centers. You've got the power center of Russia or the Russian people, although it's still very early to be narrowing it down to any sort of sense of cohesive Russian people, but he certainly sees it as a cohesive a coming together of the people at this time, and recognizes that another power center. And of course, I mean, he is a world leader, he's an ex-KGP man, he thinks very much in terms of power centers and states and control, and again, this is a common theme, which is why I wanted to draw it out of the push and pull that you've got going on between Russia and the Western powers, which was then, of course, not United States in any ways. It was simply Europe. He goes on to talk about how the Poles were engaged in polonization of this part of the population. They introduced their language there, tried to entrench the idea that this population was not exactly Russian, but because they lived on the fringe, Ukrav, they were Ukrainians. Originally, the word Ukrainian meant a person living on the outskirts of a state near the fringe. It was engaged in border service. It did not mean any particular ethnic group. Now, the historians who have looked at this, like Apostolic, have said, "Well, no, that's not exactly correct. You could bring in the Cossacks there, but nevertheless, we are looking at this for this part of the this part of Brokenomics to talk about, you know, what is going through Putin's mind. What is he envisaging? And again, it comes back to that theme that he's talking about a common people, a Russian people, who are being pulled away and are artificially being put into the orbit of another group of people. So here are the Poles. Okay. Then they talk about this more, and he goes on to say, you know, so that you don't think I'm inventing these things, I will give you these documents. And he hands Tucker some documents which apparently have been taken from the archives and translated into Russian that Tucker can go and have a look at. Don't know what's in those. Tucker hasn't yet shared in any great detail what was inside of that. You have to wonder if maybe Putin was passing Tucker some more sensitive information. We don't know. Perhaps they contain Michelle Obama's dick pics. We really don't know, but I'm sure he will come back to that. Anyway, now at this point, Tucker is starting to get a little bit frustrated, and he comes back, "Well, I'm not sure why this is relevant to what happened 2 years ago." I think it is very relevant to actually what happened 2 years ago. It's that in Putin's mind, and you know, a number of people, of course, say that this has justification, is that ethnic Russians were being treated very poorly. And he does come on to say this in eastern Ukraine. But these are people who are Russian, who speak Russian, who consider themselves Russian. And he gives examples of that, which we come back to nearer the end of the interview. But that is the core of what Putin is describing as his justification for the, you know, what we here in the West call the invasion. It's interesting that he does not primarily dwell on security concerns. So he does not, for example, make his case justified on the basis of, well, NATO. I mean, he does talk about this later on, but he doesn't say, well, look, NATO continually expanded and expanded and expanded. And there was commentary coming out of the West about how they would be stationing nuclear weapons in Ukraine and giving them to Ukraine. That I would have thought is a strong causes belli for Putin, but he does not primarily hang his hat on that. Now, just to put that in perspective, of course, we know this from a real example. When the Russians tried to place nuclear weapons in Cuba, that was the justification for a massive ramping up of hostility, and you know, very nearly took the USSR and America, and thereby extension its satrapies such as the UK to the point of war. And I can absolutely guarantee you that if Mexico or Canada were to enter into a military alliance with, you know, Russia or China, and then Russia or China were to want to be placing nuclear weapons pointed at the US into say Mexico or Canada, the US would have absolutely no hesitation in striking first. None whatsoever. There was no doubt in my mind that you know, Mexico City or you know, anywhere in Canada would not be a smoking ruin within a few weeks. So interesting that he didn't go there, but he likes to come at this from a historical perspective. Also, I noticed from Russian commentators who have added from this is that none of this is particularly unusual for Putin. Putin will often launch into these lengthy historical perspectives every time he goes on Russian TV now. He hasn't had an interview with a non-Russian for a good while now, a number of years now. But whenever he does this on Russian TV, apparently he comes back to this frequently. So, you know, more filler later, and he's talking about under the rule of Catherine the Great of Russia, reclaimed all of its historical lands, including the south and the west. So, again, this is talking about how Kiev was the first capital of what you might call Russia, and that it got pulled away. And well, of course, there was a very notable period with you know, Genghis Khan, who swept through the area and sort of messed things up. Again, historians will point to the post-Khan, the post-Mongol invasion, as being the point where something much closer to modern Russia emerged from the ashes of that afterwards. But nevertheless, Putin is simplifying, and of course he's pushing an agenda as well. So he is attaching more of this sort of straight line, a straight but broken line between the connection of Kiev and Ukraine to what is Russia. So anyway, so he talks about Catherine the Great recapturing these lands. And then this is very interesting. This is one of the bits where I did disagree somewhat with Apostolic Majesty in his stream. So Putin says, and I quote this, "Before World War I, the Austrian general staff relied on the ideas of Ukrainianization. It started to actively promote the idea of Ukraine in Ukraine. The motive was obvious. Just before World War I, they wanted to weaken a potential enemy and secure themselves favorable conditions in the border area. So the idea which had emerged in Poland that people residing in that territory were allegedly not Russians, but rather belonged to a special ethnic group, Ukrainians, started being propagated by the Austrian general staff. Now, Apostolic Majesty, in his excellent stream, talks about how he didn't see it in those terms. He saw it in that the Austrians were exploiting an advantage that they could. Of course, Putin is a KGB man. He thinks very much in terms of covert actions and propaganda and state building. So in his sense, you know, that is exactly what is taking place here. Now, I'm happy to accept that. We know full well that Western leaders will frequently make use of propaganda and psyops and an attempt to persuade populations of narratives that are useful for them, that give them a geopolitical or military advantage. And I see no particular reason to disbelieve that the Austrian general staff before the World War One were perfectly capable of doing what is a routine matter today. I think that is a perfectly acceptable idea here. But he's basically calling the Ukrainianization as a distinct group, as opposed to being part of the Russian ethnos, as effectively war propaganda. So, okay, fair enough. He then goes on to talk about the pre World War II period. He says this interesting thing: in 1939, after Poland cooperated with Hitler. It did collaborate with Hitler, you know, and he goes on to talk about how Poland was not perhaps, you know, more than cooperating. I mean, he uses the word collaborating there to describe the ties that Poland had with Hitler's Germany. Of course, collaboration is quite a pejorative term. It's it has certain connotations. The only thing I did think was it is perhaps a bit rich, to say the least, of Putin to talk about Poland's collaboration, as he calls it, with Hitler, given the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, which was, I mean, if what Poland was doing was collaboration, the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact was undoubtedly collaboration as well. But again, he's advancing his own argument, and I think he was potentially being a bit rum on that particular point. Right. Anyway, so then Carson says to him, "May I ask? You're making the case that Ukraine, certain parts of Ukraine, eastern Ukraine, in fact, has been Russian for hundreds of years. Why wouldn't you just take it when you became president 24 years ago? You have nuclear weapons. They don't. It's actually your land. Why did you wait so long?" Now, that's quite a good question, isn't it? I think there are good reasons, and perhaps we come back to that next time Tucker asks it, but that's a perfectly good question. But clearly Putin doesn't want to go there at this time. So Putin says, "Look, I'm coming to that. This briefing is coming to an end. It might be boring, but it explains many things." Tucker responds with, "It's not boring." And Putin says, "Good, good. I'm so gratified that you appreciated that. Thank you." So Putin is somewhat irked by that. Now, to be fair, you don't interrupt the king when he's in full flow. Now Putin may not be the king of Russia, but he's certainly the closest thing that the modern world has to an old style king or emperor. So I'm going to use that title for him. And of course, kings are not used to being interrupted, particularly in their own house. So he gives Tucker a bit of a telling off before that one. So anyway, so then he talked more about Poland collaborating with Hitler, about how territory was moved around in this war period, about how parts of Germany were given to Poland, and indeed it's quite interesting, actually. That's worth looking at its own. The western section of what is today's Poland used to be Germany. Now that is a very interesting reflection, actually, and it kind of speaks to Putin's point, because Putin is like, okay, you know, a common ethnos has that culture, that mindset, they have that about them as a people, and that persists even if the land borders change. I would just note that if you look at Polish election results even today, so when Donald Tusk, who is of course very much a globalist, he's part of the club, part of the regime that we all have our issues with. The basis of his support is the German bit of Poland. If you look at the the Polish bit of Poland, they were very much opposed to Tusk. And more the former government, which was very strident on saying things like, no, we're not going to have Infinity Africans into our country. And as a result, Poland has not had the enrichment events that that we have to suffer here in the West on a regular basis, because they simply close themselves down to this. So, I mean, that is, again, a good point in Putin's arguments, in his favor here. And of course, he then goes on to talk about how, he talks about Hitler asking Poland to give him back these sections of Germany. Putin says, well, Poland turned out to be uncompromising, and Hitler had nothing to do but start implementing his plans with Poland. Now, yes, of course, Poland is not going to give up its tax cattle, regardless of how strong the claim is. And you could, I don't want to be seen as advancing Hitler's arguments, but nevertheless, it is the case that those sections of Poland were very German. he was trying to reconstruct that. But of course, no nation ever willingly gives up its tax cattle, not because it necessarily believes in the people and the culture, not because it loves them for who they are, but all nations are desperate to keep its herd in place and compliance, expand it where it can, as it does today with mass immigration, and certainly not let it go whenever it can. Okay, so he then goes on to talk about after the Great Patriotic War, as we call World War II, those territories were ultimately enshrined as belonging to Russia, the USSR. So he's talking about the other side now. As for Poland, it received, apparently in compensation, the lands which had originally been German, the eastern parts of Germany. These are now the western lands of Poland. Yeah, exactly. So like I say, those bits that voted for Donald Tusk, those are they have their origin in Germany. So it is perhaps less surprising that they feel the globalist influence much more than other parts of Poland. And why they returned a global homo government. Okay, so anyway, then he goes on to start. Then we're sort of in the 1900s, and we're talking about now the USSR. Putin says here, Stalin insisted that those republics be included in the USSR as autonomous entities for some inexplicable reason. Lenin, the founder of the Soviet state, insisted they be entitled to withdraw from the USSR. So this is kind of interesting, because now we're getting into the USSR. First thing to say, he conflates the USSR with Russia. I don't think that's accurate. The USSR was never trying to be the Russian Empire. The USSR was trying to be, it's in the name, isn't it? It's the United Socialist Soviet Republics. The Bolsheviks, they wanted the USSR to encompass everything, You know, they wanted it to expand across the globe. And what they envisaged was that, I mean, that they would have been happy with a Britain that was a socialist Soviet republic, that it was all bought in. So, you know, the Bolsheviks, they weren't trying to create Greater Russia. What they were trying to do was create a collection of Soviet republics, because the, you know, the workers of the world were going to rise up and unite in socialism. So that's not really inexplicable, but we do start to see from here on in Putin's absolute loathing of the Bolsheviks. I did kind of wonder if maybe there's a little bit more going on there. I mean, put it this way, the Bolsheviks were overwhelmingly Jewish. Is that something that's going through Putin's mind? If it, because he sort of hints in places, it did make me think. I wonder if he's trying to make that point here. He never says it explicitly, but I couldn't help but wonder if that was in there. I mean, Lenin, I believe Lenin had a Jewish grandfather, although he was raised as Orthodox. But yes, overwhelmingly the Bolsheviks were Jewish, and I wondered if he was just reticent to go a little bit further on there, which he knew that he couldn't do for a Western audience. Possibly, I don't know, but that did occur to me. But he certainly questions the decision making and the priorities that the Bolsheviks made in a number of places.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.